welcome to another edition of View from the Bleachers Radio. I am your host, Joe Aiello, and I'm actually joined by my co-hosts this week, Sean Powell and Josh Cornwall. Sean is back from Sochi. He survived the treacherous conditions and is back joining us. Guys, welcome.
Welcome.
Thanks. Great to be back stateside.
Yeah, Sean, tell us about your travels.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you this, guys. Sochi, you know, and I know back here, the American media, you've heard a lot of stuff, and a lot of negative things about the accommodations. And I will say it's really not as bad as you've heard on the reports. I mean, the water in the hotel only burned your face just a little bit. It wasn't that bad, really. And then I know you guys have heard about the bobsledder who broke out of the bathroom door.
Yeah,
but my door was pre-broken, and so I had no problems at all. I mean, there was already a hole in it.
That's good to hear, though.
Honestly, there's these reports of these live wires and showers and stuff. I mean, you can count on one hand the times I was shocked. It wasn't that bad.
I thought you were going to say count on one hand the amount of times you took a shower.
I mean, you know, I'll tell you this, guys, and you'll be excited to hear this. The hottest thing over there. Like, all the athletes are talking about it, the press was talking about it, even, like, the local Sochi residents, like it or strike it. That was the hottest. Everybody was excited about like it or strike it.
It's sweeping the nation. It is.
It is. It's huge. It's sweeping the world. I mean, they were huge over there with like it or strike it. And I saw Sean White, like, just the other day, and he looked kind of down and depressed. And I said, Sean, what's up, man? And, you know, I know you didn't win a medal. I must be disappointed. You know, it's not really that, man. There was no like it or strike it last week.
Yeah, I know.
On the podcast.
We got some disappointing comments back about that.
And I told him, hey, it's coming back. And he, big smile on his face. That was great.
Sean, the real question is, how many dogs did you bring back?
Oh, dude, there are no dogs there anymore. They're gone. There's tales. There were tales of dogs, but they're all just ghost stories at this point.
Oh, I thought you were going to say tales, T-A-I-L-S.
Well, that would have been a good joke. I should have thought about that before. But no, it was pretty sad to hear what the dogs were like before we got there.
Well, it is what it is. But we're glad to have you back. We're glad to have both of you guys back. And hopefully the listeners enjoyed the co-host last week, Chris Neitzel. And I know we enjoyed having him, and I am looking forward to getting into his book. But we've got some work to do today. We've got another edition, and we want to get right to it. So just a reminder, we very much appreciate the ratings and the reviews that we've gotten on iTunes. So far, we've gotten 5 reviews on iTunes, and I know it doesn't sound like a lot, but when you've only been doing the show for 3 episodes and you've really only been calling for reviews for 2, it means a ton. So if you could, if you haven't already done so, if you listen to the podcast on iTunes, or even if you don't listen to it on iTunes, just jump on iTunes real quick and quickly review us. It takes 2 minutes, and it does a number for us to get up in the rankings, especially above some of those older, non-updated Cubs podcasts. It would do wonders for us to be able to get up on the ratings scale that way as well. You can also follow us on Twitter. I'm at VFTB, that stands for View from the Bleachers. Josh is at JC Stats. And Sean is at Powell underscore Sean. That's S-E-A-N, as for his spelling of his first name. You can also email the show at viewfromthebleachers@gmail.com. That's where you'll want to send all your podcast questions. If you've got mailbag questions, you can also tweet at them, but sometimes there's some limitations with the characters there. So it's always easier if you've got a longer question, just shoot that in the email, viewfromthebleachers@gmail.com, and we'll be glad to get to it. We've got quite a few this podcast episode to get to just a little bit later. But in the meantime, guys, let's get to some news. It's been a little bit of a low-key first week or so of spring training. Would you agree?
Yeah.
And so as a result, we haven't got as big of news stories. You know, over the past 2 weeks we've seen – you know, arbitration hearings avoided, things like that. But this week we've got 4 main news stories to highlight, and I think some of them are a little bit quirky, but I thought they were interesting nonetheless. The first one is the one that I think people are talking about the most, and this one happened the other day. Javier Baez took some batting practice, albeit against coach pitch, and he did some damage, let's say. I don't know if you guys saw the picture, but he did some car damage to at least – there's some legends here, but at least one windshield got damaged, and he has since apologized on Twitter. But guys, did this make you excited about Javier Baez, or do we need to take this with a grain of salt and understand that, hey, he was probably hitting him off Rick Renteria?
Well, for me, I have to admit that Javier Baez is my favorite Cubs player, even though he's not on the Major League team. So I couldn't be more excited about him anyway. But I think this is just one of those add to the legend stories that if he does wind up being what we hope and think he can be in the future, it's just going to be one of those cool stories to think about. You know, there's all these legendary things, like the first pitch he saw when they sent him back to the minors last year in spring training. He hit a home run and he crushed it in spring training. So this is just one of those legend growing stories that we hope actually adds up to something in the future.
I think his response is probably the best. I think he tweeted out, "Well, sorry, buddy, but you shouldn't have parked there," or something to that effect. I remember when I was a kid, I used to go to the Twins AA stadium, the Rock Cats, New Britain Rock Cats, because back then they were the Hardware City Rock Cats. And Jock Jones actually hit a foul ball as I was walking out of the stadium. It hit a car window, put a dent in it. And I actually got the ball. But this fan didn't get the ball, much like I did when I stole it from the guy whose window was broken when I was a kid. So I don't know if they can – are they going to pay for his window? I'm sure Baez is making enough money to pay for that.
Yeah, I didn't see. I can tell you, doing what I do for a living, that is covered under your comprehensive coverage. So for that gentleman, if he needs to file it with his insurance company, they'd be glad to cover that as well.
What policy does spring training home run balls cover?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. I guess it would probably be under his auto policy, would be my guess.
Of course, the joke is going to be you could actually have a Javier Baez clause written into your contract.
Oh, I think you need to.
Yeah. No matter where you are in the country, you don't know. One of his balls can fly and hit your windshield at any point in the continental U.S., I think.
Or you could just not fix it for 5 years, and then it raises the value of the car.
Does it, though? I've never seen that in the Beckett guides.
If he could sign, his signature right above the where it breaks the windshield, yeah.
Now we're thinking.
Well, the rumors have it is that he actually laid an X mark, kind of calling his shot before he hit it, and hit it right on the X. So I don't know. Take that with a grain of salt as well, but. There's rumors out there that he was calling his shot. He's the next Babe Ruth is all I'm saying.
Well, fans for every other team would be excited and elated without any reason for worry. But for Cubs fans, we're just waiting for the disappointment, right?
I think we almost need to bust out in like a super fans routine whenever we're talking about these prospects like Baez and Bryant and just all of a sudden just bears, you know, and just go crazy and just meatheadish. But that's almost what it's like is, you know, you see these guys that are hitting – mammoth home runs, and it's like it's off Rich Renteria. We really kind of have to calm down a little bit.
True, but if you know, you use physics, the slower the ball, the more power the hitter has to contribute.
It's very
so,
true.
There you go.
That's a good point. That's a good point. I don't know if you saw it too, but Josh Vitters actually said, and this is true, he actually said that from his estimation, he thought the ball was going at least 50 feet over the fence, which, you know, when you put, I don't know how far the fence is there. But you figure if it's, you know, because from what I've heard, they were straightaway center shots. So you figure it's at least 450 probably that this ball traveled. So that's a pretty solid home run.
Right. I could be wrong, but isn't the new, if they're practicing in the new field, then they do the walls like replicating Wrigley, like the same dimensions?
I don't know. I didn't ever see that. So,
I thought they did.
Well, you figure Wrigley's right around, I believe it's 400 to straightaway center, is it not? So you figure about 450, 460 is probably what this ball traveled, which is that's a pretty good shot. Moving on to the next story, and this one I thought was interesting. Tom Ricketts says that the Cubs can make the playoffs in 2014. Rick Renteria also kind of echoed this sentiment. And my question to you guys would be, A, what else are they supposed to say? But B, I know you guys aren't with me on this, but do you think it's at all possible that they could make the playoffs? Is there anything that could happen aside from bringing new players in that could cause this team to make the playoffs?
A lot of players on other teams can get hurt.
I don't know, man. Guys, I'm telling you, I'm getting dangerously close to making a bold prediction that we're finishing 500. I really am.
Well, I think – go ahead, Josh. Okay, well, I think your first question was, what else is he supposed to say? I guess that's all he should say, right? Especially
right.
if he wants people to buy tickets and come and believe in the team, and they have that whole thing. Could the Cubs make the playoffs? Well, I mean, I guess the sun could swallow the earth tomorrow, too, but, like, I wouldn't bet on it. I mean, no. I mean, and to be honest, I hate to say this, and some people are going to be really upset. Should they make the playoffs? Is that really the best thing for their long-term growth? I'm not sure it is, to be honest. With the new CBA and with draft picks being what they are, I mean, making the playoffs and getting destroyed in the first round, is that, you know, I'm not sure that's the best thing for them long-term. So, sorry, Cubs fans, if I said that, but I'm one of you. Go ahead.
Oh, the Doomsdays, they're going to come out and get you.
I know.
They're going to send the Sochi Bear to get you.
Now, I can't remember where I saw it, but I saw an article recently, and it was some kind of hacky, small-budget blog thing. But somebody said compared Javier Baez to Yasiel Puig. Not the same player. I think we can agree that, but maybe long-term the same type of player. Now, what if Baez comes up and the Cubs are struggling, and he comes up and the team just goes off and somehow gets a wild card spot? Well, two holes in that theory. Well, I guess just one big hole in that theory. The Dodgers, even though they had a ton of overpriced talent, they still had a lot more talent than the Cubs have in this roster right now.
Yeah.
So it's kind of comparing apples and oranges. Sure, it could have a good effect if he just comes up and tears it up and they win a couple of series and get the ball rolling. Who knows? But that's a kind of a lofty expectations.
Yeah, I think people need to curb their expectations a little bit in terms of the team, obviously. But I go back to what Rick had said, and I think, you know, I don't think he has any – he can't say anything other than that, because if he says – we're going to completely suck this year, then why would you come out and support the team unless you're a fan that's looking to watch prospects, looking to watch guys that are potentially flip candidates? You know, unless you're really into the team and just the overall development of the team, you're not going to come out and watch this product unless you're just there to just do the stereotypical Wrigley thing and just booze it up. So I don't know.
What percentage of fans actually believe him? I shouldn't even say fans. I should say fans who will be patrons of Wrigley Field this year.
I think more than you would think. What would you say, Sean?
Oh, I don't know. Well, Joe, if you can believe we can get 500, then maybe it's more than I think.
It's gonna happen. Yeah, it's gonna happen. I'm telling you, it's gonna happen. You'll see.
I think they're probably your just casual baseball Cubs fans that, you know, are probably actually there to see the games and they're into it. You know, there might be a proportion of them that aren't really keeping up with everything in the off season that thinks maybe every year you have some chance, even when you really don't.
Yeah, I agree.
You're telling me there's a chance.
Exactly. It's that kind of thing. Right.
Well, moving right along, Mike Olt is the next story that we're talking about. And I noticed this little nugget. I don't know if you guys noticed it, but he's really not getting any love at third base this year so far in the spring training. He didn't make the depth chart when you pull it up, and now there's word out of camp that he's been working out at first base as well. Guys, I'm worried about Mike Olt's prospects here at third base. I don't know that he's going to even get a legitimate chance unless he just tears it up. I think that they've kind of started to write him off. Would you agree?
Oof. It's been what 9 days? How long has it been since everybody reported?
Well, how long has it been since everybody reported, or how long has it been since Starling Castro reported?
Good one.
Because those are two different answers.
Oh, I understand. Since everybody reported.
I believe it's somewhere in the neighborhood of about 6 days, 6 or 7 days.
Okay. So the last time that this podcast went on, it was about that time.
Exactly.
I think it's a little early to start writing a guy off. I know we read a lot into preseason things and depth charts. I know I do a lot of football writing as well for Buffalo Bills things and Bleacher Report. And I spend like hours analyzing this preseason depth chart, and half of the guys at the top of the depth chart aren't even going to be on the roster come final cuts. So I don't know. I think it's good to get him – play our reps at other places. especially if there's no one else to give Rizzo a day off.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's a little early to say, okay, we're sticking with Donnie Murphy and Valbuena, and that's it. Olt can play first base as a backup or go in the outfield or just stay at AAA till we can trade him again.
Yeah, I agree. What do you think, Sean?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm not ready to write him off yet, even with these reports. I mean, he's been there. His reports say that his eyes, his vision is really a lot better. I mean, it could be another one of those what else is he going to say kind of things, but apparently he's off the prescription eye drops and he's seeing the ball better. And I heard that he was actually in the outfield taking fly balls with a bat, like not gloving fly balls, but like trying to hit. Maybe they're just working on eye-hand coordination and making sure he can like see things well before they put him out there full turn. You know, I don't want to read their minds, but you know, it looks like they're doing some unusual things with him to make sure he's ready. So hopefully within a week or two we see him take some reps at third, because obviously I think most Cub fans would really like him to try to see him get that third base job and go with it and be what we think he can be. But if he's not even given the opportunity to do that, it would seem very odd. So surely he's going to get some chances at third soon. And if it's not, you know, in the next week or so, I think we can start to get worried. But maybe right now they're just trying to really ease him into it, making sure that he's healthy and can see before they put him in. That's the only thing I can think about, honestly, because I can't see from any perspective why they wouldn't want him to win the job and give him that opportunity.
Right. What bothers me about the situation is, when you look at the three guys, if we're going to look at three guys as being Murphy, Valbuena, and Olt, I think you've got to give the job to the highest ceiling guy right now, and that's Olt. And so if he plays his way out of the job in spring training, then obviously you can't go with him. But right now, to not even be listing him in the depth chart and things like that, to me that's foolish, because Olt's the guy that's got the highest ceiling. He can be an impact player, whereas I don't see Murphy or Valbuena being any more than just basically an average third baseman at best. And so I don't know why you wouldn't just be Olt at the top of the line ready to go. But you know, I don't know, maybe I'm naive, but or maybe
and who
I'm
knows maybe no maybe since they know him, they think that might be undue pressure, and they don't want to give him they don't want to make it his job to lose. They want to make him earn the job. Maybe it's a psychology thing, who knows.
Right, that makes sense. Our final news nugget this week is One of the fan favorite prospects in the system, Dan Vogelbach, supposedly has come to camp 30 pounds lighter this offseason. Now, some will joke that that means he may be right around 300 pounds, but I have not seen him. But if you look, and obviously this, you're going to have to take this as with also a grain of salt, but if you look at Dan Vogelbach's baseball reference page, I don't know if you guys have ever looked at that to kind of see what he's listed as. And he is listed at 6'250". So you figure if he's lost 30 pounds, 6'220", that's not bad. That's pretty good, I think. And, I think if that is legitimately his weight, I don't think we have got anything to worry at that point. Now, this is why I say that you've got to take that with a grain of salt. John Kruk would be a name that I would bring to mind. John Kruk is listed at 5'10". Guess what weight he's listed at?
255.
Lower.
Really?
Yes.
Like his playing days or now?
This is what he's listed at on baseballreference.com.
Okay. So not now.
No.
Not now. That would be...
I'm going to go 227.
Lower.
No.
Lower.
Lower than 210?
Lower than 210.
195.
Lower.
No.
Someone's lying.
5'10", 170.
Yeah, there's no way.
Wait, look, if Chris Farley plays you on SNL when they need someone to play you, you're not 170. You
know? Right. So I bring that up because obviously if John Kruk is 5'10", 170, we may not be able to legitimize the authenticity of the Dan Vogelbach weight on Baseball Reference. So we'll see. But from what I've heard, he's looked good, so – I'm rooting for him. I hope he does well, and I hope that the weight loss is not going to also result in a power loss. I think somebody mentioned that on the site the other day as well. So we'll see. I don't know. I hope it was good news. I thought it was encouraging. So moving right along, we're going to get to the mailbag. We got three questions this week, and I thought they were interesting questions. I don't know if you guys had a chance to read through them, but We've got some good ones, and the first one comes from Colin. And Colin, I apologize, I can't remember where you came from, if you were Twitter or you were email, but I apologize on that one, and we'll go ahead and get your question answered. And the question is, the Dodgers signed Paul Mahalam for 1 year at $1.5 million. Did the Cubs make any effort at all to sign him? Perhaps he chose the Dodgers because they have a great chance to win the whole thing this year. 1 year would not have kept anyone in the minors that long, and we really could have flipped. We could have flipped him again at the trade deadline. Colin, I agree with you 100%. As far as I know, I don't know about you guys. I didn't see anybody that any notes that the Cubs were pursuing him. Although it would have been a name that I would have liked to see them bring back. But you know, it is what it is. I think he's actually making a little bit more than $1.5 million after incentives with the Dodgers. But guys, what do you think about Colin's question?
Go ahead, John.
Okay, well, you know, I think he brings up a good point there, but, you know, we could have signed him again, flipped him again, but I think one of, and I've thought about this before, one of the flip sides, if you want to call it that, to the Cubs' habit recently of signing guys with the intent of trying to get a good half year out of them and then flip them for high value at mid-year, a la what we did with Mahalam last year and also Feldman, is that guys are going to start knowing that that's what we want to do.
Yeah.
And yep. If you're a player that doesn't want to get flipped mid-year, especially if you're someone that's already happened to, even, you know, I think he makes a good point with the Dodgers being contenders. I think that's huge. But also knowing that the Dodgers probably aren't going to flip him for assets at the deadline like the Cubs were almost assuredly going to do. And he's already actually been through it personally. So I think that's going to – all things being equal, I think, he, you know, he's probably not going to want to be flipped again. And so even if the Dodgers and Cubs were equal teams, I think you're going to pick a team that doesn't have the habit of doing that. So I think this flip strategy, while I have agreed with all the flips, and honestly, I think Theo and Jed have gotten some really, really great trade value in these flips, you can only do that for so many years before free agents are just going to avoid you if they don't want to be flipped.
Yeah, especially at this point in his career, too. It was nice while it lasted while he was here, and they had a good working relationship. But at this point, you're not going to take $500,000 or even $1 million more to come to a team and then have no real say of where you're going to go at the trade deadline. Here, he can go, and at worst, if he doesn't play well, he's DFA'd, and that's the end of his career, I guess.
Yeah, I'm actually curious to see what you guys think in terms of this question. I was listening to Jesse Rogers, and he was on Buster Olney's Baseball Tonight podcast. And one of the things that he mentioned to Buster was he felt like the concept of them bringing in these guys and flipping them at the deadline was probably coming to an end, and that this was probably the last year that we're going to see a lot of deals that were involving flipped players because of the fact that we're going to start seeing players that are on this roster be guys that are ready to be contributors for the major league team in the future, whereas in the past we've seen guys like Dempster and Garza, you know, Feldman, these kind of guys that were brought in solely as bridges to the new talent, and I think so. I think we're probably starting to work our way past that concept. You'll still see some reclamation projects, but I'm wondering if we're going to start to see that kind of die down after this trade deadline.
Yeah, I think so. I agree. I mean, that's what I was saying earlier. I think that there's a time limit where you can do that for a while at the beginning of your rebuild, and then it's just not going to be possible to just do it indefinitely. Either guys not wanting to come back or you know, you're going to just find that there's a limited number of guys out there that's possible to do with. So, yeah, I agree. I think we're going to get toward the end of that flip at the deadline period.
Well, question number two comes from one of our regular readers or listeners in North Carolina, Chris, who's in the military stationed over here in North Carolina. And he said, I really liked your jersey topic from this week's podcast episode, and I have a question for you about that. I've wanted to get a new Cubs jersey, and I've been thinking about a Sammy Sosa one. He was my favorite player growing up, but since he's been kind of outcasted by the Cubs fans, how would it look to wear his jersey again? Has enough time passed for the wound to heal? Guys, Josh, what do you think about the wound? Is it okay for Chris in North Carolina to get the Sammy Sosa jersey?
I think it's easier as a displaced fan or a fan that wasn't investing top dollar to go to the games over the last 15, 20 years or so, and was a part of that whole home run race and everything that followed the 5 years after that. Personally, I know a lot of people have lots of disdain for Sammy Sosa, and deservedly so. I've almost kind of forgotten about him, as sad as that is. Just the whole Balco scandal and all the Supreme Court stuff and the cork bat, and I don't know. It's been better that he's been away. I have no problem with someone getting a jersey at this point, but I'm sure there would be some backlash from a fan, one of every 10 people. I don't know. It's probably as good as the answer I can come up with.
Sean, what about you?
Well, yeah, you know, I agree on the whole with Josh. I mean, and I do agree that even though it's kind of sad, I almost don't even think about Sammy Sosa anymore. It's almost like it's like a gap in my memory. But when he comes back, I mean, honestly, you know, during the home run chase in 98 and all that stuff, those were great, great times at the time. And those are good memories to have of him. I never really did have the utter hatred and venom for Sammy as some other people did. So I personally wouldn't care if someone had a Sosa jersey. I mean, you might look at it twice and go, oh, that's kind of weird. But, you know, I wouldn't have a problem with it at all. I mean, I think, I don't know if we're far enough out that it's retro yet. And at some point it's going to be kind of like, you know, retro quiche to have a Sosa jersey.
Yeah.
But like at the moment it's not. So a retro kitsch. Did I say quiche? That's a dish. Sorry. I do know the difference between food and another concept.
Sammy Sosa egg dishes.
Sammy Sosa quiche. That sounds, hopefully that's not his next marketing strategy. I don't know. I think that would work. Anyway, kitsch is what I meant. Sorry, listeners. Anyway, yeah, I don't think we're there yet to like the, you know, the ironic Sosa jersey, but maybe in another 5-10 years it will be. But I mean, I wouldn't have a problem. But I could see, like, if you wore that out to the bleachers of Wrigley Field, that some player or some fans might give you some business. But then
somebody's
they would probably
boo you.
They would probably boo you no matter what you wore anyway. Somebody
right.
would. So I think it's fine. Go ahead. It's not like, you know, we won the world championship and then we were dethroned because of his. I mean.
Yeah.
Really, at the end of the day, it didn't really make that much difference in the scheme of things. So.
And being fair, Sosa jerseys are probably the cheapest Cubs jersey out there right now.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. I haven't looked on eBay or anything like that, but I actually wonder if they would be cheap. You know, you can easily get a Fukudome jersey or something like that for really cheap. But how cheap is the Sammy Sosa jersey? I don't know. I kind of put Sammy Sosa jerseys in that same category as like a Mark Grace or a Greg Maddux or a, you know, Ryan Sandberg, where, yeah, they're, you know, he's that type of player in the Cubs history, and I don't know that you can get those at discounted prices yet.
Oh, there's a Sammy Sosa jersey with tags, a large, for $25 on eBay.
Really?
Oh, I think the Grace, Maddux, Sandberg jerseys are going to be way hotter than the Sosa. I mean, Maddux just went in the Hall of Fame, Sandberg's in there, great. I mean, yeah, I don't think that's really comparable, but who knows? I don't know.
Well, I think what we're trying to get at, Chris, is that we are all giving you the thumbs up. Go ahead and get the Sammy Sosa jersey. I don't have a problem with it. I don't think these guys do either. And if other people do, just remember that they just need to remember that you're in the military. You've got a gun. So I don't think there really is. I mean, just at that point, just drop the mic. Last question comes from Chuck. He's a loyal reader of the blog. He's been a reader and a commenter for quite some time. And he asks, if Starlin Castro continues to struggle at the plate and in the field, does his contract become an albatross for this team, considering how unwilling the front office is to spend money? And then he qualifies it by saying, personally, I was ecstatic about this deal when it was done. However, since his numbers have continued to decline and his approach has been all over the place, I'm starting to have second thoughts. He also gives us a bonus question. Have Castro's struggles been a result of excessive tinkering? Sean, we'll start with you. Do you think that Starlin Castro, I think a lot of people look at this as a make or break year. If Castro struggles this year, what do you do with him?
Yeah, that's really tough. And actually a really great question there. And first of all, I do want to address one like little assumption you made in that question, which is, how unwilling this front office is to spend money. I'm not sure that's it. I don't want to go off on too much of a tangent, but I think they're unwilling to spend money unwisely on older players. So, that being said, you know, Castro's deal when it was signed looks really team-friendly if he was the player we thought he was going to be at the time. But that's the big question, right? So, if he could return to what he was 3 years ago, hit around 300, get 200 hits a year, he doesn't have the power of the on-base that you really want, isn't an elite defender, would that contract be a good one? I think it would be pretty good, you know, considering how much the market's exploded for free agents lately and is a premium position on the field. I think that actually would be a pretty good team contract. If what we saw last year from Castro is what he is going forward, no, it's not a bad contract, or it's not a good contract. It's pretty bad. But on the other hand, I don't think it's the albatross contract. I don't think it's something that's going to bury the team. So bad contract, but not something that we couldn't overcome, because it's really not that many dollars per year. And if he was on the team not doing great, I think he could subsume it, especially if, you know, the bigger topic of the renovations and the extra revenue work out in the long term. I think the Cubs could afford to have somebody that's kind of mediocre. What's his decline due to tinkering? That seems to be the consensus among people you hear reporting on the Cubs and talking to coaches and other players. That last year they tried an experiment where they wanted to see if Castro could be more patient and be and wait for his pitch to drive to increase his on-base and power potential. And it seemed to obviously not work at all, whether that was on the coach's side or Castro's or both. We don't know. We do know his manager was let go, so that may be something in there to factor in. I think the tinkering's part of it. So now what do you do with Castro? Do you just say, go back to the way you were, just start swinging away and try to get the hits as you can, or do you go back to trying to make him selectively aggressive? It seems like what we've heard about him possibly leading off the Cubs order and getting his swagger back was the terms that we use, that they're just going to let him loose and just say, well, we tried to make him more than he was. We're just going to have to live with a free swinger who gets a lot of contact, and we can live with that. So there's a lot there, but I think that I'm pretty optimistic about Castro returning to form if he's kind of allowed to do that. So I think the contract will turn out to be good in the long term.
Josh,
this probably isn't the best way to justify an answer, but if you add up Castro's next 3.5 years worth of salary, it is actually the same of what the Cubs will be paying Soriano and Edwin Jackson this year.
Yeah, and that's funny because they're paying Edwin or Soriano this year, and they don't even have production out of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm with you guys. I think the contract is not an albatross because, I mean, if you 7 years, $49 million guaranteed, that's nothing. That's nothing. So I don't think that's a big deal. Where if you had to even use him as a backup player, that you'd be stressing over that.
Yeah.
So thanks so much, guys, for the questions. We always appreciate the mailbag. Remember, if you guys are wanting to get your questions in, viewfromthebleachers@gmail.com, or you can tweet at us, and we'll be glad to get those questions in the show. We did have a question from Caps, but it is a whole different animal. And I mentioned to him that we're going to probably just have to make that a whole topic in one of the future shows. And so we'll get to that real soon. So now I want to move to a new topic here. And this is what I call the topic of the show. And I apologize, we're going to have to make the topic of the show fairly brief. But here's the concept here, guys. We want to plant our flags on some players. And what I wanted to kind of go over, and I want to explain to the readers a little bit about, or the listeners, what we're getting at here. What we want to do is not necessarily guys in the system that we think are going to be stars. Because if you look at a top 20 list or you look at a top 10 list, you can identify those guys pretty quickly. We know those guys' names. But these are guys that maybe are at the back end of the top 20 or top 25 list, or maybe guys in the system that you don't even necessarily think will be a star, but for some reason you are rooting for them. To give you a couple of examples, these are some players in my life that I've rooted for. These are guys that I've planted my flag at. These are my guys. One was Kyler Burke. I don't know if you know who Kyler Burke is, but Kyler Burke was brought in a trade. And for some reason, I was just drawn to Kyler Burke. I was infatuated with the power that he had, and he just never really showed anything. Eventually got converted to a pitcher, and now is out of the system. He's pitching for someone else. But Kyler Burke was the guy that I wanted to succeed. Another guy that I was drawn to growing up was Ray Sanchez. He was the stuff in my mind at shortstop when I was a kid. I wanted to be Ray Sanchez, and I think I probably would have made the same amount of money as doing what I'm doing right now. So, if I was Ray Sanchez. So it is what it is, but you guys are kind of looking for players that are – you're planting your flag on. This is my guy. This is who I'm rooting for. I'm sticking with this guy. I've got my flag planted in him. So, Sean, we'll start with you. Just kind of identify a couple of names and real briefly kind of why you chose them as your guy.
Yeah, the three names that I thought of were Dwayne Underwood, who's partly because I live in Georgia now, and he was like a pretty well-known high school pitching prospect, but plus fastball and breaking ball, and if he can add a third pitch and get some control, just really raw right now, 19 years old, but he could be a potential really impact arm in the system. The second guy is, I hope I'm not butchering his name, Gioscar Amaya. And I think he's intriguing because the Cubs are this offseason apparently trying to switch him over to catcher. And as we know, of weakness in the Cubs system. And so if he could get comfortable behind the plate, he might actually be the Cubs' top catching prospect right away. And then the third guy is a guy they drafted out of Missouri the second round last year, which is Rob Zestrizny. And mainly is the reason I like this guy and I'm rooting for him is because he's left-handed. And it seems like all the Cubs' really top prospects, both offensively and defensively, are righties. So I'd like to see a left-hander potential starting rotation guy come up through the system and have success.
My three. And if only I'd read the show notes beforehand.
Yeah, to give the listener a little behind the scenes there, we were doing our little pre-show discussion, and apparently Josh did not read the end of the show notes that I sent and didn't even know to prepare for this section, so he's a little bit flying off the seat of his pants.
The first guy is a guy I've kind of inherited from due to where I am in the country in New England, and that's Lars Anderson. I have no real reason to like Lars Anderson. I've seen him play a few times at Pawtucket when he was in AAA for like what seems forever. But he was supposed to be the future along with Rizzo, who was in that organization too, at first base for the Red Sox like 5 years ago. And now the guy's 26. He's been on like four or five different teams in the last year and a half alone and signed a minor league deal with the Cubs this offseason and playing first base for them. Down in Iowa. I don't know.
I'm looking at his numbers. Do you know why he didn't play last year? He didn't. It does. Or you know what? Hang on. I'm looking at his major league numbers. So he must.
He got traded and then released and then released again.
Okay. Yeah. He played in the minors last year. Never mind. Yeah. He's in the White Sox system.
But I remember I was actually in Pawtucket about 3 years ago, and the guy hit one of the farthest balls I've ever seen hit in my life. Just a bomb to straightaway center field. And he, for a variety of reasons, he's never lived up to his billing as one of the Red Sox top prospects from, I think, the 05 or 06 draft. But he's a guy I kind of liked. Dylan Maples is another one, pitcher from out of high school in the 2011 draft. He went, I believe, up to A last year and just bombed. And then went back down to low A and did really, really well. I mean, he's going to be a guy that's going to – his ceiling is probably triple A in the next 2 or 3 years. But he's still young. He's got a good frame. He can still build upon that frame because I think he's about 6'2", 6'3", 200 pounds, somewhere around there. And he's got a good arm, but I don't think he can put it all together and get up to the bigs as a starting pitcher. And the last guy, and I know he's in the top 20, but I love Dan Vogelbach, and it's kind of sad to me that they drafted him. I don't know really why they drafted him other than he was probably the best player available at that position on their boards, but he probably will never put on a Cubs uniform just because he's more of a AL style guy by most accounts. But those are my three.
Well, you know, I want to touch on two things on the guys that you mentioned really quickly. First of all, Dylan Maples actually went to school not too far from my house. He's about 45 minutes from where he went to school there. He lives in, he went to a, he grew up in Southern Pines. But as far as Vogelbach, I don't understand why people say that he is a career DH. When you look at other guys in the league, we mentioned John Kruk, and he played first base and played it fairly well and fairly serviceable. And then you look at guys like Prince Fielder and Pablo Sandoval. If you just because you're overweight doesn't mean that you can't play a position in this league if your bat warrants it. And so I think he'll have enough of a bat to warrant a spot. I don't see why you couldn't get him in there somewhere. Obviously, he's not going to be your center fielder or your shortstop. But, you know, why he couldn't play first base, I don't see why that would be a problem. I don't think you just need to write him off in the system.
Well, I think most people say that he could play first. First would be his only position that he could possibly play in the field. But then Rizzo, you know, we've signed him long term and he's kind of our guy. So if he's going to play, it's either going to be a DH or a first baseman for somebody else. And it's funny because as much as National League fans are usually really opposed to the DH, like if you read a lot of things about Vogelbach, it seems like a lot of fans would be willing to have the DH instilled in the NL just so we could have him in the lineup, which is pretty funny.
Yeah, most definitely. Well, my three are completely different like yours are from all of you guys. First one I went with is, I'll admit it's a top 20 guy. It's Kyle Hendricks. He's a guy that I'm high on this year. I think he's going to make a big impact. I don't know, big impact. Maybe that's a strong words, but I think he's going to make an impact in this starting rotation at some point this year. I don't think he's going to make the team out of spring training, but I think he has the chance to at least get a few starts this year and do well with them. One of the reasons why I like him so much is he does not give up the home runs. If you guys have never looked at his stats, you really need to. Just to give you an idea, if you look at his three seasons in minor league ball, he's pitched a total of 349 innings, and he's given up 16 home runs. Last year, in a season where he had an ERA at 2.0, he gave up 5 home runs in 166 innings pitched. He gives up very, very few home runs. He doesn't walk a lot of guys, you know, just 1.8 walks per nine last year, and that was actually a high for him. So he keeps the ball in the ballpark. He doesn't put useless men on base for no reason, and he gets enough strikeouts, I think, to make a difference. So I like Kyle Hendricks. I think he can be a legitimate pitcher. Maybe not a top of the rotation guy, but I think he can make an impact at the back end of this rotation, and that's where we need some help right now. I also picked Corey Black. He's a guy that Sean and I talked a little bit about at the start of the podcast before we jumped on the air, and I think he can be a part of the starting rotation. I know Sean is not quite as sold on that, but I like Corey Black. I'm going to plant my flag in him and kind of say that I believe in him. He was a guy that we got in a trade from the Yankees last year, and I think that he can do good things. If you're not following him on Twitter, make sure you jump on Twitter and follow him. I apologize. I don't know his Twitter handle off the top of my head, but he is on Twitter. You can follow him there. And then the last guy that I chose was partly because of his name, but partly just because I'd like to see him do well, is Rock Shoulders. Rock Shoulders is one of the best names in the minors right now, but also a name that I can't remember which prospect it was that I asked last year about a guy that I should know or that Cubs fans should know about that they may not, and he mentioned Rock Shoulders. He said, you know, this guy just knows how to hit. If you look at his numbers last year, he had an on-base percentage 100 points over what his average was or just about that, and then, you know, slugging percentage about 100 points over that. So, you know, an OPS of almost 800, which is kind of what I'm looking for when I evaluate a player at a different level, is, you know, if you can hit 800 OPS, I feel like that was a productive year at the plate, and Shoulders did that. He's done that over the last 2 years between Boise and Kane County. So I think you're going to see him do something and maybe end up being even if it's a bench guy, a guy off the bench. He's not a highly drafted guy, but he's a guy I'm rooting for. I'm planting my flag in Rock Shoulders. So there you go. Please feel free to share with us your guys, who you're planting your flag on. Obviously, you feel free to say you're planting your flag with Javier Baez, but that's not all that fun. So just guys in the system that maybe don't get a lot of love that you guys are rooting for and maybe why you're rooting for those, make them quick, and we'll try to share some of them over the next couple of weeks and just kind of share and have some fun with that. Guys, now it brings on the highlight of the show, everyone's favorite part of the show, the part that's sweeping the nation and is even reached as far as Sochi, and that is Like It or Strike It. And I'll be honest with you, I hadn't prepared Like It or Strike It questions. I had completely forgotten. And so I had to make these up as we were recording today. So it is what it is if they're kind of rotten today. But we'll start with this first one. And Sean, I want to start with you. Like It or Strike It, the concept that Tom Ricketts has come out and said that the Cubs can make the playoffs in 2014, Like It or Strike It, the concept that sets Rick Renteria up for failure.
I'm going to strike it in reality. I think anybody that is really knowledgeable about the baseball or the Cubs is going to know that that's not possible, and that that's just what the owner is going to say. And I think he's going to be in the honeymoon phase in his first year anyway, so I'll strike it.
I will strike it as well. Swain was not fired because of wins and losses. He was fired because he wasn't developing young players. And as long as Renteria does that, and we see steps of a lot of the young guys who went backwards last year, they go forwards this year, you won't have any problems.
See, I'm going to like it. I think that I don't know that it necessarily sets Renteria up for complete failure, as I don't think he's going to get fired after this year. Because to be honest with you, I don't think Theo and Jed can afford to fire another manager really quickly into their tenure like they did with Dale. I think people will start to really question whether or not they have some talent evaluation when it comes to coaching. But I think it puts undue pressure on this year's team, where it's a team that's not necessarily scheduled to do very well. I think it puts some undue pressure that why would you come out and say that? If it would be easier for them to just say, listen, we're still rebuilding. Fans need to know that. We are going to be better than last year. But to come out and say we're going to make the playoffs, I think maybe setting up our team for failure. Could we make the playoffs? Certainly. But will we make the playoffs, or do we have a good chance of making the playoffs? Probably not. And so I think if you would have been more honest there and just said, hey, we're rebuilding, guys, pardon our dust, I think it would have put less pressure. And so I'm going to like it a little bit, that it puts a little bit of pressure on the first-year staff, and I don't think you needed to do that. Question number two, Jake Arrieta has come out and said that he will be ready for opening day. Josh, like it or strike it, that Jake Arrieta will be ready and on the Major League roster come opening day.
I'm going to go with strike it. I think he'll probably be ready by maybe the end of April, maybe the middle of May. But there's just a lot of stuff going on with the shoulder tightness that I don't really like, and I think the Cubs don't really like that either.
Yeah, I'll say strike it too. I mean, I think he's going to start on the DL, especially because the reports, the last I heard, he wasn't even throwing off the mound yet. So there's no reason in a year that you don't expect to be competitive to rush him out there in the freezing cold Chicago April. So you might as well make sure he's totally 100% eases into it. And then if he pitches from May on, he's not going to miss that many starts anyway. So why take the risk? There's no reason to do that at all.
Well, could you think that he – let me pose this question to you then. Would you think that he could start the year on the Major League roster but out of the bullpen with a guy like Carlos Villanueva maybe – starting in the rotation and knowing that they're going to be swapping in the next week or two?
I think if he's healthy, he starts. And if he's not, I don't think they're going to try to switch him up that quickly. I think they'll just wait. They've got enough arms. In fact, a nice side effect might be they can try out an arm that would not have made the team normally to see what they have in the major league level, which actually might be a nice bonus.
Mm-hmm. Question number three, Edwin Jackson was the topic on Wellington Castillo's mind. Apparently, he thinks that Edwin Jackson is a totally different-looking pitcher this year. So like it or strike it, that this will be a turnaround year for Edwin Jackson, Josh.
Well, he can't get much worse than last year, although he did turn around the second half of the season. I'll say like it. I think that he's been a above-average pitcher in the past. He's also been a below-average pitcher in the past. And I don't think that it's fair to say that he's going to be exactly what he was last season. I think he'll be a little bit better. He's accustomed to what Wrigley is now. He's accustomed to what the fans are. And he's not going to be close to the $13 million he's getting paid a year, but I think he'll be a little bit of a better pitcher.
Yeah, I like it. I mean, well, I won't like it as a turnaround. I don't think you're going to see this as like a huge revelation. I think he's just going to regress back to his norms, and his norms are kind of what we paid for and expected. So I don't think he's going to have like some career year, but I think he's going to be back to his career averages, which is a workhorse pitcher that takes the mound every fifth day and gets you deep into games and gives you a chance, and nothing extremely spectacular, but solid. I think so. That's what we'll see.
Yeah, we addressed on the last week's show the concept of flirting with other teams, and I mentioned how for a while I had a little bit of a short-term relationship with the Rays, and when I was flirting with the Rays, Edwin Jackson was one of the pitchers that I really enjoyed watching pitch. I have no real reason why, but I'm rooting for Edwin Jackson. I'm going to like it. I think that he's going to be a guy that may not be quite up to par with what we're paying for him, but I think he's going to be an integral part of this rotation if this team's going to make 500. And I think that you're going to see a lot more improvement this year from Edwin Jackson. I'm going to like it. Question number four is Derek Jeter recently came out and said that he was going to retire at the end of this year. So like it or strike it, this gives Derek Jeter announcing his retirement gives the Yankees more incentive or more, I guess, more better odds to win the World Series this year. Sean, why don't you start us off?
I'll say strike it just because knowing New York and the Yankees, I don't think it's possible for them to have more expectations to win the World Series. I mean, I don't think any franchise in all of sports has more expectations to win every year, especially what they shelled out with Tanaka and what they keep spending. So I think I don't think you can add to what was already as high as it could possibly be.
Yeah, it didn't. The whole Mariano Rivera thing didn't impact anything last year. I don't think it's Jeter, who might not even play the entire season due to injury, that's going to do anything this year.
Yeah, I agree. Like you said, Mariano Rivera didn't really do anything last year. On that note, I wonder if the Yankees are in it and they're doing well down the stretch, could we see Mariano Rivera come back and pitch in the pen down the stretch to kind of go out in style with Jeter and maybe win that one last ring? It'll be interesting to see. I don't know. I'm going to strike it for right now. I don't believe in the whole emotional aspects of it. And, I didn't believe in the whole concept that the Red Sox were winning it for the city of Boston after the marathon stuff. But, you know, maybe there is something to it, but I'm not buying. I'm going to strike it. And our last question is more of a personal one, guys. I need some jersey advice here. Ray Rice, one of my favorite players in football, was recently charged and got himself into some legal trouble, has recently been charged with beating his wife. If you haven't seen the video on TMZ, he's basically dragging her lifeless body out of the elevator. And my question to you then is, from a jersey standpoint, Ray Rice is a jersey that I own right now in my closet. What do I do with it? Like it or strike it that it's okay to continue to wear the Ray Rice jersey?
Can it be an option to just leave it in your closet? So can I half like it, half strike it?
No, you gotta be all in, man.
I'm gonna like it. I mean, you spent the money. I know that, and plus, we don't officially know what's actually happened with this whole thing. I mean, you see bits and pieces, and the video certainly sways you in one direction towards believing that he was beating on her, but I don't know. I still have a Marshawn Lynch and a Travis Henry jersey in my closet that I wear on occasion, usually only to flag football games, but on occasion. So why not? Wear that Ray Rice jersey with pride.
Nice.
I got to go strike it, and it's not because I don't believe in second chances or redemption or forgiveness. It's just because you've got other options, and when you don't, you know, you're not being forced to wear the Ray Rice, I wouldn't do it. Like, so personally, I wouldn't wear that jersey again at all. That's my opinion.
Gotcha. So what do I do with it then?
Burn it.
No. See, I got such a good deal on this jersey. I can't not wear it. I paid $50. It's an authentic Ravens home jersey, and I got it on eBay, unused, completely brand new, authentic one, $50. I got to keep wearing it.
Okay, but what you could do is tape something over the rice, like some funny. You could be creative, so you could tape some clever saying over there. You can still wear the jersey, have the number, but you got some. I'll leave that up to you what that's going to be.
I don't know. I'm going to go with it. I'll be honest with you. When I was a kid, my favorite player baseball wise growing up was Kirby Puckett. And I still rooted for Kirby Puckett in life overall until the day that he died, even though he was charged with some interesting things as he got past retirement age there. So I'm gonna like it. I'm gonna say that I can still wear it and wear it with pride, because for all we know, Ray Rice didn't necessarily do anything wrong, although it's looking more and more like he did. And we don't know the whole circumstances. Maybe she had it coming, you know. And obviously I say that tongue in cheek, but you never know what the whole situation is. And so I'm going to keep wearing it. And even if he's charged, I'm going to keep wearing it because I paid for it and it is what it is.
You could always just wait until they win another Super Bowl and tape a TH in front of it for their third Super Bowl win for thrice.
And with that, we'll end another segment of Like It or Strike It. Also, I want to throw it out there to the listeners. If you guys have got some Like It or Strike It questions, you feel free to have at it and send them our way. We'd love to use them because I'll be honest with you, sometimes it's a chore coming up with the Like It or Strike It questions and making them halfway decent and entertaining. So if you've got some questions, feel free to send them to us. But that's going to do it for this edition of the show. Just want a couple of reminders quickly. We really appreciate any feedback that we have on the show. So if you've got questions or comments or just overall praise, we'd love to hear it. Even if you've got some criticism, whether it's that you know, our microphones sound like crap, or we sound like we're talking in a tunnel, whatever it is, please give us the feedback because we like that. You know, it does help us improve the podcast, and we appreciate that as well. I also want to kind of hint at this. We're going to have a show announcement next week about a contest that we're going to be running in the month of March. It's going to involve a new book by George Will. If you haven't had a chance to look it up, do that. The book is called A Nice Little Place on the North Side, Wrigley Field at 100. It's a new book by George Will. We're going to have a giveaway. Just to give you a heads up, multiple copies of that book will be given away on the podcast. So we'll have some details next week about how you can participate in that giveaway and how you can possibly earn one of those books. So stay tuned till next week. In the meantime, like I mentioned, go on iTunes, rate the show, review the show. We very much appreciate that. Follow us on Twitter, at VFTB, at JCStats, and at Powell underscore Sean, S-E-A-N. Until next week, I'm Joe. For Josh and Sean, I'm Joe, and that's been another edition of You from the Bleachers Radio. We'll see you next week. And that is a lesson on how not to end the show.